coming to you from EPA's Technology, Innovation, and Field Services Division, where I will be serving as one of the online moderators for today's live broadcast. Hopefully you're joining us for today's ASTM Greener Cleanup Standard Guide webinar, which will provide an introduction to our participants, and it's been sponsored by the guide's development team as well as EPA. Our live broadcast is scheduled to run from roughly 1 p.m. Eastern until 3 p.m. Eastern. I'll turn things over to our other instructors and presenters in just a moment, but before I do so, I want to cover a few basic housekeeping items for our participants. So with that, let me go ahead and transition over to those instructions. For those of you that are new, we did send out a reminder email message that has a complete set of instructions on how to join us for the live broadcast. That message will point you to something known as the seminar homepage, where you can read more about the broadcast, find contact information for the presenters. There are links to additional resources, including the guide, as well as the slides that we'll be using today. You can even provide feedback after the live event. For now, though, you'll want to click a button labeled Go to Seminar in the upper left corner. Once you click that button, you'll be asked to identify yourself by name, as well as the number of people at your location, and you'll be successfully checked in online and brought to our interactive Adobe Connect room. Once you join us through Adobe Connect, you'll be able to watch in real time as our presenters go through materials. We will be posing interactive questions as well, so I encourage everyone to try to join us online for the live broadcast. If you have problems joining us online, you can download the slides and simply follow along on the phones, but please try to let us know if you're having issues so we can troubleshoot them and resolve any problems you might be encountering. Audio will be available by default two ways. By default, that audio is going to come in online for all participants through your computer speakers or headphones. If you have problems with the online audio, I encourage you to locally check your own volume settings. Make sure that the online audio is turned on. In the upper right of your screen, you should see a green speaker icon like this. If it's not shaded bright green, try clicking on it to make sure that online audio has been enabled. If the online audio is causing problems, is skipping, isn't coming through correctly, feel free to send me a message in the Q&A window, and I'll be happy to give you the toll-free call-in information if you'd like to join us on the phones. Just know if you join us on the phones, all callers will be muted, and we ask that you remain muted to cut down on background noises and other audio disruptions. As I mentioned, there will be an interactive Q&A window that appears in the lower right corner where you can privately submit your comments, questions, or report technical problems at any time. Feel free to test that feature out if you haven't used it before. You'll simply click your mouse cursor on the empty box or field at the bottom of the Q&A window. You should be able to type up a message and hit enter to submit it. You may also click the cartoon-looking bubble button to the right, and that will privately submit it. We will be taking a designated break for questions and answers with our instructors, but I encourage you to submit those questions or comments at any point. There's no need to wait. So as soon as they occur to you, feel free to type them up, and then we'll take a break to read them out loud and address them live with our instructors. Today's live broadcast is being recorded, and we will automatically share a link to that recording as soon as it's available via email, and you'll be welcome to pass that on to others that you think will find this to be a valuable expenditure of their time. If you like, we have nearly 600 previously recorded Kluwen webinars available for free replay on our archives page, so feel free to take a look at that site whenever you have a free moment. Just one quick reminder, you should see your slides showing up here. Our instructors will control movement, so if you like to page back and forth, I encourage you to download the slides themselves from the seminar links or resources page. You'll see a copy of our Kluwen logo in the upper right. We will be posing interactive questions towards the audience, and when we do, those polls will appear in the upper right corner. So please stay glued to the screen and be prepared to vote and interact with our instructors when they pose questions. The related URLs appears towards the middle right of your screen. You can click on any one of those links and press the Browse to button to open them up on your own computer. And then that interactive Q&A appears here in the lower right, where you can type up your comments or questions or report technical issues at any time. I think that's the end of the technical reminders that I have for right now. I'll cover further reminders at the close of today's webinar explaining how you can access the resources, provide feedback, as well as get your hands on the recorded version as soon as we've prepared it. With that, I think I'm ready to turn primary instructors. So I think I'll pass the phone over to Carlos Pachon to help kick off today's ASTM Greener Cleanup Standard Guide webinar. Carlos?
Yes, thank you, Jean, and good morning, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Carlos Pachon. Thank you for joining us for this webinar. We were placed it on a Friday, concerned that would be a challenge for people, but we're very happy with turnout. So we're glad you could make it on this beautiful Friday afternoon and join us. In the room here are two other speakers. Myself, I am with the Superfund program here in EPA headquarters. The other person is John Simon, who is a task lead, and will be doing walking us through the core of the standard guide. And then Deb Goldblum, a colleague of mine here at EPA. She is with EPA's Region 3 office in Philadelphia with the Resource Conservation Recovery Act program in Region 3 in Philadelphia. So today we will be doing an introduction to the guide. We'll give you a little bit of background on the genesis of the guide, but keep that part short. We will then do a basic walkthrough of the main sections of the guide. And then we'll talk a little bit about what we are seeing in the field and what encouragement and incentives there may be as far as once the guide is, now that it's been rolled out and it's in the field. So with that, I'll be doing the introductory comments, and then I'll hand it over to John Simon. And after John, you will be hearing from Deb Goldblum. So let's first talk a little bit, as I said, about the genesis of why this guide exists, you could almost say. The main reason is that we still have a lot of remediation work to do, certainly in the United States, and we know that's also the case globally. There are still literally hundreds of thousands of sites that need to be remediated. In the U.S., these are being cleaned up across multiple programs, including the Superfund program, Resource Conservation Recovery Act Directive, Corrective Action Program, underground storage tanks, brownfields, federal facilities, state voluntary programs, a whole suite of programs cleaning up contaminated sites. We've made a lot of progress. There's still a lot of work to be done. We've learned a lot to date on what on cleaning up those sites, and part of the thinking here is taking those lessons learned and moving them forward so we can implement them at sites down that are still to be cleaned up. So a challenge we saw here in the EPA was how can we lower the environmental footprint of cleaning up, of those cleanup projects that are still to be done. This is part of an agency goal of incorporating sustainability into the implementation of our core missions. With respect to this offer, the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, what we are looking for is a way to implement greener cleanups, which we define as a practice of considering all environmental effects of remedy implementation and incorporating options to minimize the environmental footprint of cleanup actions. Note, it's also known as green remediation. There are several terms that that refer to this concept. Here in EPA, we define the environmental footprint around what we call these core elements. And a series of best management practices that can be implemented to address those footprint core elements. For example, in the case of energy, the main best management practices revolve around reduction of energy use, increasing efficiency, and using renewable. Examples of best management practices with respect to air include protecting air quality in the vicinity of the site and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. For water, we may consider improving water quality or not impacting water quality in the vicinity of the site, decreasing the quantity of water used, and increasing the amount of water that may be recycled from the site. Land and ecosystems, conserving, protecting, and restoring ecosystem services in the vicinity of the site, and for materials and waste, main concepts we're familiar with from other areas, which include minimizing, reusing, and recycling. So with that, we thought, what can we do about it? We went into some creative thinking here, and we looked at an example that we thought might be an interesting analogy. At airports, a lot of airports, one of the challenges they have is that in the large open areas in the vicinity of the airfields, excessive vegetation attracts wildlife to the airport grounds. Wildlife, which can be a hazard to airplanes. Certain airports, in this case, it's in Chicago O'Hare, what they're looking for, there's an opportunity. They wanted to increase the sustainability of how they manage that issue. They wanted to use less toxic herbicides. They wanted to use less fuel, reduce labor costs associated with it, et cetera. Their solution was to use these animals, including llamas, goats, burros, and sheep. What these animals help is keep that vegetation in check while at the same time having some other benefits, such as keeping wildlife off the site. So they have not changed the goal of controlling vegetation, but they're able to do it with a lower environmental footprint. Question is, how could we do that in our cleanup programs? That's how we came to the question of why is standard. So we know we still need to clean up contaminated sites. We will be doing that for a while. And we know we want to do it with a lower environmental footprint. So how can we go about doing this? And that's the concept of the standard. It can help codify best practices that are constantly evolving and growing in number. It can define the process for reducing the environmental footprint at a cleanup. It can provide a protocol for contracting purposes. And it can provide brand recognition for greener cleanups. And finally, it can result in a transparent and documented process that can be reported publicly. So let me go to how we came to work with ASTM, some of the origins of that effort. In 2008, EPA at Region 3 and here in headquarters, we recognized there was a lack of guidance on how to implement green remediation in our programs. So after speaking with several folks, including people here in headquarters, and determined that one of the things we have to do is to be consistent with federal requirements, we recognize that we should be working with a voluntary standard organization. That's one of the first steps, to see if we could do it through a voluntary means. We collaborated with the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is part, I believe, of the Department of Commerce. And they helped us in this process of identifying, first of all, whether there was stakeholder interest in a standard guide, and also what entities may be out there that could work on developing the guide. Down that road, we came across ASTM, which responded and agreed to initiate the development of the standard, which evolved into a standard guide. A little bit more of that later on. So the ASTM established a task group, which consists of professionals from consulting firms, regulatory agencies, law firms, and industry, and initiated the standard writing process in 2009. Over the next 4 years, up to November of last year, the task group wrote the standard and took it through what is the ASTM consensus-based approval process, which is, as anybody who has worked in this knows, is not a simple process. We'll hear a little bit more of that in a second. So finally, in November of 2013, ASTM published the guide, E2893-13 Standard Guide for Greener Cleanups. So we were quite satisfied when all that work was completed. A couple of important notices, though. The first one is that the guide does not instruct on how to conduct a cleanup. It provides a means for greening a cleanup, but is not an instruction, a guide, on how to actually conduct the cleanup itself. Additionally, the standard guide for cleanups does not affect or supersede existing regulations and guidance issued pursuant to federal cleanup statutes, including, for example, the circular remedy selection process provided for in the National Contingency Plan and associated EPA Superfund guidance. With that, we'll start looking at the guide itself, and I hand it over to John Simon. John?
Thank you, Carlos. When the task group first got together and rolled up our sleeves and really thought hard about how we were going to incorporate greener concepts and technologies into projects, we had a really stark realization, and that was we thought that this whole process was going to be about identifying and developing greener technologies that we could apply to cleanups. And you know, we went to bed thinking about windmills and solar panels connected to pumps. And when we really got into it, what we found out is that's not really what it was about. It's not about selecting a green technology necessarily. Now, green technologies are very important in in the whole concept of greener cleanups. But what we realize is that it's actually a process. It's not about technologies. And these greener cleanup principles would actually be integrated into cleanup projects and applied on a phase-by-phase basis. And by phase, we'll get into this in a little bit. I mean like the cleanup phase, be it site assessment, remedy selection, implementation, so on and so forth. So the take-home message from our initial discussions was it's really only green if it works. We realized as part of this deep soul-searching process that a remedy that doesn't work and has to be repeated obviously isn't green. It takes more resources and energy. But what we realized also was important is focusing on incorporating what we call BMPs, or best management practices, a pretty common term, into projects. So let's get into the basics with a quick overview of the standard for greener cleanups. This is the only guide that we're aware of that really provides a step-by-step approach on how to do a greener cleanup, also commonly known as green remediation. Carlos mentioned that, but we see those terms used interchangeably. We realized the guide had to be flexible. It had to have both qualitative and quantitative options in order to make it flexible. It includes reporting expectations, which are important not only to be able to document the process, but to ensure that the information is publicly available to prevent greenwashing. And the reason that prevents greenwashing is if the public can view documents about your greener cleanup, you can't just say you did it and not follow the guide because somebody could call you to the carpet. Carlos mentioned that the standard's not about teaching professionals on how to do cleanups, but an environmental professional, and this is explicitly stated in the standard, must lead the team and actually sign an attestation that the standard was followed at the completion of the reporting process. And first and foremost, we designed this actually, I should have put this first, to be the industry standard so that somebody in Wisconsin could talk to somebody in California about a greener cleanup, refer to the guide, and be on the same page and have followed the same basic process. So here's a quick overview of the guide. As I mentioned, the fundamental core of a greener cleanup is selecting BMPs. So that's the fundamental core of the guide and how it was developed. With this flexible evaluation process, both qualitative and quantitative, as well as being able to apply the guide on a site by on a phase by phase basis. And here's a list of the existing phases. And I'd like to, before we get into the slide, mention that these titles are program neutral, with quotes around that term program neutral, meaning that site assessment would apply to, for example, the remedial investigation stage of a RCRA cleanup, or the site investigation stage of a CERCLA program, or any number of site assessment phases in voluntary cleanup programs. So they're not necessarily meant to fit regulatory definitions, but they capture or embody what's done in a given phase. And we think that they pretty much do. And we have in the standard listed site assessment, remedy selection, remedy design implementation, operation maintenance and monitoring, remedy optimization or modification, and then there's no activity related to this, but the most important phase of all, no further cleanup. Now, what we have here on the right-hand side of the slide are bubbles with BMPs, best management practices, and on the left-hand side, quantitative evaluation. We're going to get into both of these, but what the guide is about is selecting and implementing BMPs, and then when you desire, as an option, incorporating quantitative evaluation. And this slide depicts that BMPs are actually throughout the implementation of a cleanup, a greener cleanup, that is. But quantitative evaluation is best applied. It can be applied at any phase, but it's best applied at those shown with the arrows pointing to the remedy phase. So, for example, in remedy selection, quantitative evaluation is more effective than it would be in site assessment. Although, as I mentioned, you could still do it. With ASTM, you have a relatively strict structure you need to follow when you develop a standard. And for those of you who ever been involved with the development of an ASTM standard, there's actually an incredible amount of rigor. And that's because we have this consensus-based process. And consensus is not democratic. It's not 51% doesn't rule the day. You actually have to have everybody on the subcommittee, first the task group, then the subcommittee, and then the committee for E50, which is the environmental committee, agree to the standard. And actually, the standard's balloted. If you have a negative ballot, you have a comment. The task group has to address that comment and then re-ballot the standard, and you get a whole new set of comments. Sometimes from new people who have reviewed the standard for the first time. So it's this iterative ballot, re-ballot process. And then at the end of the day, if there's still negatives that are non-persuasive, you actually have to go through a separate process in which you explain to the committee why they're non-persuasive, and then both the commenter and the task group leader present to the ASTM committee about this. The reason I'm going through this is I just wanted to let everybody know how rigorous it actually is. We spent 4 years. We had 8 meetings in which we came from all over the country together and over the phone to develop this standard. So a lot goes into it, but it does have to follow the ASTM structure. And our first two sections are scope and reference documents, pretty self-explanatory. The third section of the 8 is terminology. I always thought terminology was a kind of a boring boring section of a standard. And when I got into the development of the standard with the task group, I realized just how important terminology was. We were really fortunate to have some legal counsel who assisted us in the development of the standard. And we poured through the terminology section over and over again, because what we found is that really drove the other sections, because it defined how the process had to be followed. The fourth section is significance and use, again, relatively self-explanatory. The next, planning and scoping, which actually sets forth how the process works, what the various steps are. And with respect to that are the next three steps. The BMP process, selecting best management practices, section 6. Section 7, which Carlos is going to talk about in a little bit, quantitative evaluation. And section 8, documentation reporting. And our task group had a sub-task group for each one of these sections in which they would get together and write the section. And then we, as we like to say in ASTM speak, knitted it all together to make sure it made sense. Okay, getting into the best management practices. As I mentioned earlier, the bulk of the standard is about selecting and implementing best management practices with the goal of reducing environmental footprints. However, the task group decided you can't really count the low-hanging fruit, which should be standard management practices that we all use in our daily lives anyway. And some examples are shown on the slide: recycling office waste, using compact fluorescent light bulbs, minimizing paper use with electronic filing systems and sending PDFs instead of hard copies, not using FedEx if you don't need to. Things like that are standard management practices, and they don't really need, we don't need to spend our professional time outlining, assigning, and reporting on these standard management practices. What we really want to focus on is the best management practices, which are activities that reduce the environmental footprint of a remedy. And we, in our ASTM task group, developed a really comprehensive list of best management practices, which are the, as you'll see, are really the guts of this standard guide. So let's talk about best management practices. I mentioned that they drive the environmental footprint reduction of a cleanup. And we organize these in our master table that we're going to talk about on a technology or activity basis. And by technology, I mean, we actually got into, we assigned soil vapor extraction and phytoremediation to certain BMPs as they were applicable. Then we also assigned the BMPs to EPA's five core elements that Carlos described earlier. And then finally, we considered establishing a bar for the minimum number of best management practices that needed to be incorporated into a project. And we spent a lot of time going back and forth whether we needed to have a bar. What's the minimum that you needed to have? Do you need two? Do you need five? Do you need seven? And we realized that whatever that number we were going to pick was going to be completely arbitrary. We had no real technical basis to select a number, and it was going to be difficult to defend. And also we realized it was going to be difficult to partial to larger projects where you had a greater opportunity to apply more best management practices, more money to fund the best management practices. In a smaller project, there weren't as many opportunities, so you wouldn't be able to cross the bar. So I mentioned that we had developed a step-by-step process. And there's five steps, well, we believe we've defined the greener cleanup process into five steps. And what these five steps do is take you through how to identify, evaluate, and select best management practices. And we followed, actually, what in psychology is termed multi-criteria decision analysis theory. It's ways in which people think about their options and make decisions. So the first step that we had is opportunity assessment. Carlos mentioned there's an opportunity with mowing the grass by using animals. Similarly, there's opportunities on how to make cleanups greener. And basically what this entails, and we'll get into it, is reviewing the master list of BMPs and identifying which may be applicable to a project. Then step two is prioritizing those BMPs. Step three is selecting the BMPs, and then moving to step four where you actually implement those BMPs that you think will actually reduce the environmental footprint of the project and meet the criteria set forth in the guide. And then five is documentation and reporting, the fifth step. So the first step, opportunity assessment, using the greener cleanup BMP table. The task group painstakingly compiled the table with over 160 different BMPs. This subgroup met every Friday over the phone for 2 hours for over a year. They brought in industry experts, people familiar with bioremediation, phytoremediation, thermal treatment, to go through and determine what actually was a best management practice that could be applied to a given technology. Then they assembled the best management practices into an Excel table, and what we realized is once the table was published, it was published as all ASTM standards are, as a paper copy or a PDF. Well, you can't sort a PDF without any depth. So we went back to ASTM and said, you know what, our work's not finished. We need to be able to provide this Excel format to the users. Otherwise, the standard's really difficult and unwieldy to use because it's you can't sort a PDF. Well, ASTM realized that, of course, and they worked with us to develop what they call an adjunct, which you can purchase as a separate item when you purchase the standard or after you purchase the standard, which is actually the BMP table in an Excel format without any protections on it. So you can sort it. You can add to it. You can change it. You can use it as though you created it yourself. And it's really been helpful in using the standard. And this table, which I'm going to fast forward to show you guys, and I apologize, obviously you can't read this, but and you're not supposed to, so don't even try. but it shows the complexity and the detail in the table. On the far left, we have categories. There's 10 different categories. Some examples are buildings, power and use, water resources. And then we have the five core, then we have the best management practice. Then the third column, set of columns, is the core elements, the five core elements Carlos mentioned. And then to the right is the actual remediation technologies. So I know you want to see a little bit more about this table. So we blew up a section. You still don't need to read every word on this, but this is just an example selection from a project. And what this shows is some BMPs from a pump and treat system that was sorted based on pump and treat technology and also sorted based on power and fuel as well as energy, and kind of in that order. And what we came up with, I'm not going to read the best management practices, but a set of best management practices that primarily covered, that all covered energy as well as other core elements, such as shown here, air and materials and waste. So I'm going to take you through the next step actually using those same best management practices through step two, prioritization. Now in this example, I took the list, I prioritized them, as the standard tells us to do, and came up with this list. I'm not, again, it's not about what the actual BMPs are, it's what we do with them. And at the end of the prioritization process, I realized that one of the BMPs that made it through the opportunity assessment stage really didn't belong, so I crossed it off. In this case, there wasn't any steam at the facility, and so this wasn't a potentially applicable best management practice. So the next step is selection. So in studying these best management practices, I realized that the lower two weren't necessarily applicable to the project and the client. Of course, we could have purchased renewable energy credits. However, it wasn't deemed to be economical, which is one of the criteria, so we dropped it off. And then also, we realized that it wasn't practical to use on-site generated renewable energy for the project of this size. Solar panels just wouldn't work to power the pumps. Then the next step is implementation. And just because you select a best management practice doesn't mean that you necessarily need to implement it because it might not be practical once you get into the design stage. Well, in this instance, we wanted to supplement the pump and treat with phytoremediation, plant-based extraction, in other words, and realized that the development had changed, the area called for a paved parking lot, and that eliminated the space for plants and or trees. So we took it off the list, but still went through and implemented the other best management practice. And then finally, we get to the documentation, which the Section 8, you may recall, is documentation and reporting. I'm only going to talk about documentation Deb's going to get into the reporting, but as you go through this process, you generate tables. Those tables should be preserved and made available for steps 1 through 4 so that they can then be incorporated into the ultimate report generated for the project. Now, this is a section 6, as I just went through, is the qualitative portion of the standard. You can, as I mentioned earlier, as an option, implement quantitative evaluation to help guide the use of the standard. And Carlos is going to describe quantitative evaluation, which is section 7 of the standard.
Thank you, John. So yes, in some cases, we may have large, complex remedies. And in order to better determine where we can focus our footprint reduction efforts, we may need a better understanding of what that footprint is. For that purpose, we will conduct a quantitative analysis. That's what I'm going to talk about in the next 4 slides. There are 2 basic types of quantitative evaluation recognized in the ASTM standard guide. The first is a footprint analysis. The second one is a life cycle assessment. These are explained in section, in an appendix of the standard guide. There is a 7-step process in the guide for conducting that qualitative evaluation, and we're going to go through those steps in just a minute. There are several uses for the quantitative evaluation, which may include an opportunity evaluation of what those best management practices may be for that footprint reduction, the technology evaluation of how the operation of, the remedy can be adjusted to achieve those footprint reductions, and metrics for best management practices. So conducting quantitative evaluation, the overall approach is the first step is to define the scope of the assessment and the system boundaries. In other words, what are the boundaries, including temporal, that we will be analyzing and quantifying. The second step is to collect and organize input information for the analysis. Again, what information is necessary is dependent on whether we're doing a footprint evaluation or an LCA, and the use of the specific tool helps guide what information is needed and how it needs to be organized. This often is the more labor-intensive part of the effort of the footprint evaluation, collecting and organizing the input information. We would then use one of the tools that that are available, the calculators, using, for example, EPA spreadsheets for environmental footprint analysis, or other tools that are available. And some of these are recognized in the ASTM standard guide, or generally on you can Google them and you will come across this. We identify some of them ourselves on our EPA website. Some of them are proprietary. Some of them have been developed by federal agencies. Okay, it's then important to conduct a sensitivity analysis of the results of that of those calculations that have been run to see, for example, which key contributors are most affect the core elements that we are analyzing. And where we can target our footprint reductions. We can then use the quantitative evaluation findings to select the best management practices. And this, in certain cases, may take us back to Section 6. As I said earlier, in complex projects, sometimes those best management practices the cost may not be insignificant. We want to have a good understanding of what that BMP is going to buy us, and that's another one of the reasons why we may determine to conduct a quantitative evaluation versus just a qualitative analysis of what our footprint is and what the opportunities are. We have 2 quick examples of using that information of what a quantitative evaluation tells us without going into the details of the project from where we extracted this, although I do appreciate the contribution from my colleague, Karen Sherman, Region 9. This is an example where we're looking at particulate matter 10, PM10, particulate emissions from a project, and looking at what opportunities there may be to achieve that reduction. Our first bar there is the baseline footprint. We know that our key contributor to PM10 at this project is fuel combustion during the transport of waste off-site. So looking at what option, what BMPs there are for addressing that, one of the first ones that we look at, for example, are BMP, green remediation BMP fact sheet, or if we look at the table, a lot of them are included in that table, we see that no idling during loading is one of the options. And while you can't really tell the decrease, we've gone down from over 12,000 to about 11,000 pounds. If there are other options, we would implement those as well. For example, no idling during loading and the use of particulate filters. In this case, we've lowered our PM10 footprint from over 12,000 down to just under 4,000. Another example is a single project. This is a pump and treat system. And we're looking at the greenhouse gas component of its environmental footprint. And again, what we're looking at doing is what BMPs can be applied at this system. The first one has more to do with good engineering. The project manager here identified an opportunity to improve the air stripping. What they currently have, the baseline, is the water stream is being treated with granular-activated carbon in addition to air stripping and being discharged to a POTW. One of the first optimization options they came across is enhancing air stripping, which allowed us to eliminate the granular activated carbon treatment of the water stream. With that change, as you can see, the footprint, the carbon footprint, has been reduced from about 17,000 tons of CO2 equivalent to about 10,000 tons. Looked at additional BMPs through this optimization and. They determined that the water quality change allowed them to discharge to surface water, eliminating the need to further treat that water once it goes off-site. And we see a further reduction under optimization two with the footprint down to 6,000. And finally, they identified an opportunity to install renewable energy at the site. So the reduction in greenhouse gas associated with the power to operate this system, again, resulted in a footprint reduction of the CO2 equivalent down to 2,000 pounds. So very quickly, we walked through why one would do a quantitative evaluation, what kinds of information it would generate, and how we could use that information to reduce an environmental problem. So now, regardless of whether one went straight to BMPs or went through the quantitative evaluation, the next step is going to be to document what we've achieved. And to do that, I hand the mic over to my colleague, Deb Copeland.
Thanks, Carla. So let's pretend you're John and you just went through the BMPs for designing a pump and treat. And so for that phase, he needs to do the following. He has his BMP tables, and they list all the applicable BMPs, and they were prioritized by anticipated environmental benefit. He identified those that he implemented, and he included rationale for those that were not implemented, rationale being like cost, implementability, effectiveness. He also identifies during reporting any BMPs that were required by law or regulation. And if you were Carlos and you did a quantitative evaluation also, then you have to reference a report if you did the quantitative evaluation. So for each phase, you have this kind of documentation. There are two steps to documentation when reporting. Step one is to document by phase. Step two is the reporting, which is when you make that information publicly available. So when you make that information publicly available, that can be done at each phase, or it could be done in multiple phases. So for example, if you're working at a tank site, where it's possible for the user to go from site assessment to either operation maintenance and monitoring or no further action fairly quickly, you might report after several phases. Whereas if you're on a site that may be taking an extended period of time, you may report after each phase. Either is acceptable, but the step two is when you report out, when you make it publicly available. What you need is to report is technical summary, and it includes the following. Basically some general information about the site. So what's the name of the site? Where is it located? What environmental media are impacted? And then it also talks about what are your environmental footprint reductions across the core elements? And earlier, John had said, well, we said, should we have a bar so many BMPs? And that didn't seem credible. So what this is a weight of evidence approach. And we make it publicly available to minimize the greenwashing, because somebody, as John said, can close the carpet on it. So this is the part that makes it publicly available. And this is what you have to have. You have your technical summary form. And Appendix X2 is actually a way that puts all the information that's in Section 8 in one form that you can fill out, so you don't have to read everything in Section 8. And then you have your BMP tables for each phase, and a quantitative evaluation report if you did one. And then the next step, as John mentioned earlier, you self-declare, and that just says that it's a self sort of certification that I followed the protocol and the standard. I want to go back a second. On the footprint reductions, when you do choose, when you report your footprint reductions, you can do it qualitatively, like I reduced the water usage through my BMPs significantly, but, or it could be I reduced the water usage by 10,000 gallons a year. So depending on which program to use, whether you use BMPs or quantitative evaluation, either applies. So with regard to public availability, John has his report and he needs to make it public available, and I know John, he's going to actually submit it to ASTM, because ASTM is offering to help us out by putting a website up, and you can post your documentation right there. All you need to do is contact Kate McClung at the address, and they will post your results on their website. Right now you have to contact Kate, but we're working towards a, they are working towards a way that you will be able to upload it directly. But you don't have to do it at ASTM. Maybe you just put it in a public repository, or you could post it on a website, your website, just make sure it's publicly available, or you could submit it to a regulatory agency as long as you have their prior approval, and then people can access it through Freedom of Information and FOIA requests. Section 8, the other part is, when do you have to submit it? Well, you don't have to submit it any time. It's really, it's going to be site-specific. It depends on the needs of the user. It depends on the requirements or agreements with a regulatory program. It could be because of a commitment through a contractual agreement or with stakeholders in the community. And what, again, the standard recommends the results reported after the implementation of cleanup activities, but it's a, you don't have to. Okay. Again, this was another effort to make it minimize greenwashing, but there's flexibility. We understand sometimes you could design a remedy and it might take years till it gets implemented. So on that technical summary report form, it asks you, is it for an evaluation only or is it for implementation? So again, we just want to be transparent about the outcomes. So just to give a summary about the standard, it is voluntary. It's not, we're not mandating a new cleanup, okay? It's flexible, and that's why I said it's a standard guide, not a standard practice. A standard practice is all appropriate inquiry. It has must in it. This is no must, it should. It's universal, meaning it's program neutral. It doesn't matter if you are in Wisconsin or in New Jersey, if you're in the Brownfields program or in the Superfund program, you're following the same protocol. It's transparent. The idea is that you make the results, whether it's the evaluation or the implementation, publicly available of your decision process and your outcomes. It's a tool, and we said the 160-plus BMP table has a lot of information in it on available on ways that you can reduce your environmental footprint, and pulled in a lot of experts to build that table. And finally, what ASTM does, the name provides brand recognition. It provides credibility to the work you do. You can say, I did a greener cleanup, and that will mean something to people. Similar to the way that you say, hey, that's a LEED building, that means something. This will carry credibility. In the standard came out in November of 2013, and in December, EPA's Assistant Administrator for the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, that's OSWERD, issued a memo of encouragement. And just so you know, the Assistant Administrator for OSRA oversees the EPA Superfund program, the Record Corrective Action program, the Brownfields program, the Underground Storage Tank program, and federal facilities. So all the waste hazardous waste cleanup sites under that purview. So this is a cross-program memo that says, it said several things. It said, it summarized the principles. It said that EPA had worked on this document. And in the end, it says, in the agency's pursuit of a cleaner, safer environment, I recommend the regions and OSRA programs facilitate and encourage use of ASTM standard guide for greener cleanup in your efforts to implement greener cleanup practices. So that memo went from the assistant administrator to all the 10 regions, the regional administrators of them, and also the program offices here in headquarters. And so I want to talk about what's happening since then. So that memo came out, and keep in mind, EPA is a cruise ship. It takes a little bit of time to turn it, but things are happening. It happened in December, and since that time, we've already started conducting outreach like this one. Region 3s and Region 6, their Superfund programs are piloting the BMP table at select Superfund fund lead sites. Region 5 is pursuing insertion of language in its regional terms and conditions for brownfield grants, stating the grantees will use the ASTM standard guide for greener cleanup to the extent possible. Region 9 is planning to use the standard guide during implementation of their updated greener cleanup policy. So these are just early champions. There's a lot of state work happening, and thank you for the Itsuamo Task Force lead that has worked on this project and done outreach to the states to help move this forward. Illinois references the standard guide in their voluntary cleanup program website, as well as other places of their website. Massachusetts is incorporating greener cleanup goals, that is the core elements, into its regulations and referencing the standard guide in policy as a way to achieve this regulatory requirement. Minnesota is in the process of updating their green and sustainable remediation guidance with a reference to this standard guide in the near future. And they're also right now piloting the BMP table in its green and sustainable remediation evaluation project. And Wisconsin is plans to include the standard as a resource for complying with the state cleanup rules and NR 722.09. They also include, Wisconsin also includes a link to the standard within their green and sustainable remediation manual. And they also include a link on their Wisconsin Initiative for Sustainable Remediation Redevelopment website, also known as WISER. So these are early adopters. There is more stuff happening, but these people are leading the way. If you want access to the standard, okay, there's various ways to do this. Individuals can just go to ASTM website, purchase the standard there. It's $60. The adjunct that John mentioned will be released probably in a month or so. There's two adjuncts. One is the BMP table, which then you get in an Excel spreadsheet to actually manipulate yourself. You can add BMPs to it. And then the other adjunct is a writable PDF of the technical summary form. And so that what that does is sort of captures all the information you need to, the expectations that are defined in Section 8. It puts it all into a writable PDF. So you can just put that down, and if you want, post it on the ASTM website or other websites or wherever you make it publicly available. If you are a bigger organization, you can purchase a subscription through ASTM and just email them. If you're an EPA person, EPA has a subscription, and if you're sitting at your computer, you go to this link, and then you type in E2893, and it pops up. So you have access right there at your desk. If your states, we've learned it's varied. Some states do have subscriptions, some not. Again, states who are interested in purchasing, can reach out to ASTM. We also include some helpful links. I think CLUIN, which this is being hosted by CLUIN, is really the go-to place for information on greener cleanup, green remediation, and it has a section on the standard there. EPA's cleanup program, the OSRA program, has also a link to the standard, to information about the standard, background information, contacts for if you want headquarters program specific information. They will tell you who to contact in headquarters if you want how the standard is viewed by that cleanup program. And then we also put our names down below with links to our email addresses. And before I wrap up, the one last thing I want to say is just a shout-out to the whole task group who worked tirelessly many weekends, many nights, on their own time to actually pull this all together, and it was really a wonderful experience. Carlos.
Yes, so with that, the presentation part is over, Gene. I was going to see, should we hand it back to you for the Q&A? And then once I have a chance to see the survey results, we might discuss those as well.
Okay, well, with that, let's go ahead and turn to the audience for some questions. For those of you that are participating right now online, you should see a Q&A window that appears in the lower right corner of your screen. There have been a few pop-up messages from me as we polled interactive poll questions to the audience. If you're in the middle of typing up a message, you can continue to submit your messages by simply clicking your mouse cursor on that empty box at the bottom of the Q&A window and typing away. We can start reading through some of the questions that have been submitted electronically and then try to collect a few more and go through those. Carlos, if you're okay, I'll start reading through some of those questions.
Yes, please do.
Okay, our first question comes in regarding the BMPs, and that's I believe, referencing the best management practices. One of our participants would like to know if the BMPs will be available as online resources.
This is John Simon. Question being, will BMPs be available as online resources? They will be if you purchase either the standard, in which case you get the list of BMPs in PDF form, or if you purchase the adjunct, you will actually be provided a working Excel file with all the BMPs. They are ASTM products and can only be obtained through ASTM.
Okay. Excellent. Actually, in reference to that adjunct table, one participant went on to say that I do not see the quote adjunct Excel table available from ASTM yet. What is the ASTM schedule for availability of the adjunct table? Will purchase of the standard today allow for access to that adjunct table later?
ASTM is in the process of finalizing the adjunct. It's due out within the next month, hopefully a little bit sooner. And if you purchase the standard, you actually purchase the adjunct as a separate item. So they're two separate items. ASTM may allow for a single purchase at a higher point with a slight discount to be able to obtain both items, but they are separate.
Okay. Our next question asks, what is the basis for excluding a technology based on cost? For example, can every project decide that solar-powered pumps are too expensive based on some arbitrary standard?
The answer is yes, but it's not necessarily an arbitrary standard. Many BMPs will actually save money. For this specific example of solar-powered pumps, you have the option of doing a cost-benefit analysis, looking at the return on investment, and perhaps it would be less expensive. So then in that case, you wouldn't necessarily discount it based on economics, but the standard does not require any single technology to be implemented. So for example, even if solar-powered pumps could be implemented, they don't have to be implemented because it's not driving towards a given technology. It's driving towards reducing the overall environmental footprint of the cleanup.
I agree. All right, let's take another question. Our next participant asks, will there be an independent evaluation board to judge if the, quote, project is a green one based on the submitted evaluation report? They're likening this to a similar process that LEED projects go through.
This is Deb. There is no third-party certification for this right now. That's why it's a self-declaration, and that's why we have sort of checks and balances to make sure that, you know, people are not abusing the system, and that's why you make it publicly available. So that person who's going through the process, first of all, has the information, their rationale, their thought process is publicly available, as well as their self-declaration saying, I followed the protocol. And so they're putting their reputation on the line out there when they do that.
This was this is Carlos. This is a discussion. That's an important question, and thanks for making it. We went through this the first couple of years. We suffered through that question quite a bit. In the end, determined the decision to go with a self-declaration a standard guide was based on the desire for it to be applicable at a wide range of types of projects, from small underground storage tank cleanups to large, complex Superfund sites. Creating that additional level of documentation and the third-party verification would probably have knocked out the usability of the guide at many, many smaller projects where the burden of conducting all that work would not make it, you know, the return on investment would not justify undertaking the effort. So we determined that it would be a self-certification. But like Deb described, you know, the level of documentation required certainly would allow any party to look at and determine if at least it what was conducted passes more than a lab test.
Okay. I do have a few other questions that have really kind of honed in on this concept of the criteria. And I think we've talked about them, but let me just read these two questions and see if we can kind of clear up this whole issue together. So the first one asks, can you clarify the criteria for establishing a project as a green cleanup? Are there specific measurable targets of improvement? And then, again, another question related to that. They want to know, well, this is now sort of looking at the opposite. What are the standards by which a project would not be considered a green cleanup? If the process is pretty much the same thing that we already do in our normal practices.
Hey, fair enough. What makes a project a greener cleanup is actually going through and following the process outline in the standard guide for greener cleanups. So you, at a minimum, you need to go through 7 of the 8 sections. Section 7, quantitative evaluation, is a separate section. But most importantly, you have to go through the 5 steps to select BMPs and consider potentially applicable BMPs in the process. And that rolls right into the next question, which is what would not make a project a greener cleanup? Well, essentially, if you go through the guide, we are confident that there will always be best management practices that you can apply to an existing design. So there would not be an instance where you would have a project that we wouldn't be able to apply this standard to and reduce the environmental footprint. And so another way to say it is we as a group don't believe that there's a remedy out there that anybody is considering or implementing that could not be made greener.
So and on that, that was also part of that earlier discussion we mentioned. A lot of discussion took place with respect to reporting of whether or not there should be a minimum threshold that you know, a project has to overcome to, you know, to reach a bar. So we determined that, again, that would have been an arbitrary level. That minimum level of number of BMPs or footprint reductions is not a requirement of the standard guide. However, any entity that is requiring it, be it a corporation that has its corporate sustainability policy, or be it a, you know, regulatory agency at the state level, et cetera, may establish its own requirements as to what the expectations are of what these cleanups will achieve. So again, it's more of a protocol to identify and implement best management practices. It does not set a bar in and of itself.
Right, but it does have a big component of a robust, you know, reporting and transparency. So you have to report your results across the 5 core elements.
Okay. Our next question comes in regarding slide number 27. I don't know if you want to click back to that slide as I read it out. This participant specifically asks, why wouldn't the optimization number 3 have been identified as a BAT or BAT option right from the start?
I think it's related to the pump and tree system. And again, this is a project. This information was provided by a colleague in Region 9. And the option number, which one was it? Two?
It was slide number 27. Why wouldn't the optimization number 3 have been identified as the BAT option?
This one, or is it? No. Oh, here. So why would it not have been identified as what?
As the BAT option from the start. So number 3, which appears to have the lowest emissions.
Well, first, number 3 doesn't have the lower. It's an incremental decrease, and this is a historical project. So this project was operating for many years, and this is part of optimization conducted after many years of operation. That option may not have been available when the project was put in place. So that's actually a good question, because the idea with the guide is that it's applicable not only new projects that are being designed and built, but also when we revisit an existing project that has been operating for many years, and that's often the case with pump and tree systems, where we do have a process to go back and evaluate the performance, and at that point we may decide to conduct this analysis and identify BMP. So I hope that answers the question. It's a historical project. That option may not have been available when it was initially built.
Okay, excellent. Our next participant asks if the documentation can be incorporated into Phase 2 and Phase 3 remedial summary reports that are already being done, or do these things have to be separately reported?
They can be put into a report, but in the guide talks about this, I think, in Section 1 and also Section 4. You should consult with the regulator first to see whether they want to make this part of their review or part of the process. So I would strongly recommend, so does the document say, reach out to your regulator. Ask them what their policies are first before you just start saying, I'm going to put this in a report. And then if you get the okay, yes, it could be incorporated into a report. Anything to add?
No.
But absolutely, if the agency supports it, it's fine.
Okay. Are we going to make CEFA or SEFA training available for practitioners?
Yes, good question. Thank you. I had intended to announce a date on this webinar, but weren't able to schedule it. We are looking at doing it in September of this year. We've had it in the past, but we've learned a lot since. Since the release of the standard guide, there's a lot of momentum, and we're learning a lot about the quantification process. So I think what we will do, if you subscribe to TechDirect, you will hear about the upcoming training, which, again, will be in September, but the specific date hasn't been set yet. What we will also do is send an email to those who have participated on this webinar notifying them that CEFA training is going to be available, when it's going to be available. Registration process and all that will be the same as for this webinar. It will be on Fluent. Thanks for the question.
All right. How about this one? How does this compare to EPA's footprint analysis guide?
So CEFA, what I talked about earlier, the spreadsheets for environmental footprint analysis, are, say, the tool that's associated with the footprint methodology. The footprint methodology is more of a document that explains the process of quantifying environmental footprint. We realized that while we did have our own spreadsheets that we were using to apply it, we realized that a lot of companies were reinventing the wheel and creating their own spreadsheets, so we decided to make those available. So CEFA and the methodology are one and the same.
And this is Deb, just to follow up. So just like I guess John or Carlos said early on, this doesn't teach people how to do a cleanup. Likewise, for whether you're doing life cycle analysis or footprint analysis, it doesn't teach you how to do this. There's Appendix X4, which talks about some similarities and differences between those two techniques, but this says you could use for quantitative evaluation whatever approach you feel you're comfortable with that works for the site, and basically within that you should follow these 7 steps, but it does not explain how to do that. That's where you would use the CEFA to say that's where you learn the guts of how to do it.
Okay. All right, let's keep going with these electronic questions. Our next one asks, will the standard be integrated into the standard CERCLA RCRA remedy screening process, i.e. time, cost, short-term effectiveness, et cetera?
No, we don't see that happening, although the information that, for example, would be generated from a footprint analysis can be used in existing processes. That disclaimer we had up front is important. It does not supersede existing regulatory requirements, but it can be worked in the existing protocols.
Okay. Our next participant asks, where would we be able to see the publicly submitted projects that have gone to ASTM?
On the ASTM website, and I think we might have to get back to you on where it's on the E50 webpage.
And it's currently, it hasn't, you know, it's a newly issued standard, and actually that web page has not, it's set up, but it has not yet been populated.
Okay, so if they go searching for it, they may find it, but there may not be any content there.
They may find it. They probably won't find it. It's ready to go. It's just not live. Because it doesn't have content yet.
Okay. How about this next question about incentives? Are there incentives for private owners to implement these types of practices, for example, tax benefits?
That is a very good question. There are currently, well, none of us who are presenters are actually tax experts, but I don't believe any of us or tax advisors, but I don't think we're familiar with any tax incentives. There may be some that are available. We would urge you to look in your state or municipality for tax incentives. But there are social and public relations initiatives and advantages to using the standard, and there will be more. So a number of large corporations are doing greener cleanups, and they're getting publicity throughout throughout the media, whether it's the EPA website, a state website, conferences, and they're known as leaders in green in applying green remediation. So there are definitely incentives to be doing this. And not only that, you can actually save money.
All right. We have a question if there's going to be a follow-up webinar that will summarize real-life websites where this type of standard has been implemented.
Yes, this is Carlos. I expect we'll include some of those as part of the footprint webinar mission in September. Also, based on the turnout for this webinar, we had close to 400 people registered. I'm not sure what the actual turnout was. Maybe, Gene, you have that information. But we suspect a lot of people, I'm sorry?
About 280 joined us live today.
Okay. So I suspect a lot of people may have had an interest in participating live and weren't able to. So we may have a repeat of this webinar later on this summer. And as far as specific projects, we hope to include details like that in the September webinar.
Okay. I'm going to read through a few comments that have come in from some of the participants. And this is coming from a participant out on the West Coast who's trying to help us summarize some of the questions or the confusion over terminology. So they go on to say that I think one way to answer the question about reaching a certain arbitrary bar is to clarify that there are, quote, greener cleanups as opposed to, quote, green cleanups. That's why we at EPA changed the name. I don't know if either of the presenters can comment on that concept.
That's, that clarification is much appreciated, and they're exactly correct.
Great. All right, and then getting back to that bar, we have another comment that says, if there is no bar and a project can be called green only by going through the documentation process, where is the driver for spending the additional funds to make a real choice to go with the greener technology?
I don't know that somebody would. I would say someone would not do this if they're not interested in actually reducing the environmental footprint, saving money, or because they need it because of some expectation with contractual agreements or policy organization. This is a voluntary standard to do a better, more thoughtful cleanup. So it's not right now. It's certainly not a requirement. Certainly some states are starting to pull it in. So the driver is that we can do our cleanups and do them better with a reduced environmental footprint, and as John said, often save dollars, and also be able to, for certain entities, be able to market themselves as doing a greener cleanup. Those are the types of incentives.
Yeah, so this is Carlos. So that's the standard guide itself, and the reporting requirement, I guess you could say we don't consider it to be cheat proof. And that was part of the discussion we had earlier about setting the bar, having a third-party certification, et cetera. The requirements for it to be, quote-unquote, cheat-proof would have raised the bar as far as the cost of implementing the guide to a level where it would only probably be used at a few very large, very expensive sites. So a decision was made to make it more flexible. It does make it vulnerable to a certain degree to cheating, but the public availability of the information, the documentation required to be in conformance with the guide, we believe is sufficient to ferret out where cheating may be taking place.
Okay. We can still take in a few comments or questions. We just have one or two more in the queue, but feel free to keep typing them up. While we're trying to get through some of these last questions, I have pulled up those audience polls that we threw up throughout the webinar. So if you didn't notice them in the upper right corner, we've now got all five questions up on the screen. You can still vote, and we'll walk through some of those questions in just a few moments. Let's turn back to these online comments and questions. And in this case, I'm going to read off a comment that has a question buried within it. This participant says, "At present, we don't have a legislative requirement for green remediation. Our social marketing tools, such as LEEDS, the LEEDS, having a greater influence on the uptake of sustainable remediation than imposing these types of considerations by legislation. The question relates to the regulatory burden on the part for the regulator, for example, one more thing to have to review, versus relying on voluntary and market-driven implementation."
Where was the question? I'm sorry, I missed.
No, that was the statement. Right?
The question, he asks, are there social marketing tools like LEEDS, are they having greater influence on bringing sustainable remediation out into the real world rather than imposing regulations by law? So they want to know, if you can't legally enforce somebody to do this and come up with a legislative standard that we have to comply with, when you develop these more socially driven, we want you to do better, here's a way to try to do it better, and a process to follow to do better that's voluntary, are you finding that those types of social drivers are more successful than trying to force it through on a legislative process?
Okay, now that I understand the questions, I mean, there are agency resource limitations, as we all know, and I think this is a new approach to trying to actually, it's a voluntary standard, actually get, again, a better cleanup, a cleanup to promote environmentally preferred practices without a regulation. So the idea is that we are promoting environmentally preferred practices, but we are not regulating it at this time, okay? So states or there could be changes in the future, but this is actually an innovative approach to try and do that.
Right, and the question goes back also to the incentives question, which was asked earlier. There was a specific question about tax incentives. There are financial and there are other types of incentives that can be provided by all parties involved, be it a regulator, be it a site owner, be it, you know, depending on what your role is, there are incentives that can be made available.
Okay. We have another comment that asked if you could give consideration to drawing equipment vendors into the process. They think that being able to say that your prepackaged system is a, quote, greener compliant would be a really big marketing plus for these vendors.
We maybe not so much equipment vendors, but service providers, consulting and engineering firms. I would anticipate that as this becomes more prevalent, it's certainly one of the things that they make their potential clients aware of, their experience in implementing the standard guide. I think that that certainly would be a desired outcome. And I think it would make things roll.
And I would go on to say that for the vendors, we actually would offer some caution to make sure that the remedy selected is not selected just because it's green, but to make sure that to pick the remedy that's going to be most effective and green when that is appropriate. A vendor may have a claim that they have a green technology. We would urge practitioners to actually not research that claim necessarily, although that would be wise, but more importantly, to ensure that the implementation of the remedy is effective in reducing the contaminant concentration to acceptable levels, and then making sure that it reduces the environmental footprint.
And as John said really early on in the presentation, it's not about a specific technology, and it's very site-specific, and it's about a thought process about how to approach what you do in a greener way, sort of like Carlos's llamas on the airport. So it's not a specific technology.
Okay. We've got a big question here. One of our participants wants to know, how many man hours does this tend to take for a green evaluation? For example, what is the anticipated commitment for a gas station spill cleanup?
Okay. That's a good question. Of course, the answer is it varies. But for a small cleanup, to go through the process and to the five-step process could be done in 10 to 20 hours, along with the documentation reporting. And that's actually based on experience. Larger projects could take longer, particularly if you involve quantitative evaluation, in which case the financial commitment could grow.
All right, well, I don't see any other electronic questions or comments in the Q&A window. We'll leave that up for just another moment or so. Carlos, I don't know if you and Deb and John want to walk through some of those poll questions and talk about some of the responses that you're seeing while we're waiting to see if there are any outstanding questions that come in.
Yes, Jean, a question. Can I modify the screen or should I just – is
sure,
everybody seeing the same thing I am?
So yeah, with all the questions up.
Yes. So.
Yep.
Okay, so am I managing it basically now?
Yep.
Okay. So thanks. Yeah, let's do that. Let's just walk through this. The three of us were focusing on what we were saying, and we weren't seeing the poll results. So we're seeing them now for the first time. So maybe I'll just comment on it and give John and Deb a chance to say something as well. The first question was, this relates to some of the things we have been hearing. What is your driver for implementing the guide at site cleanup projects? So again, the answer is not asking who you are, where you come from. It's just asking what is your driver. So it looks like the highest number of answers are associated with corporate or agency policy. So I guess that could be a private company that has a corporate sustainability policy, or maybe a regulatory agency that is encouraging its use. So we had 39 responses there, 45%. The second one is recognition and public awareness, and that's something that it's good to see. It's something that we expected as well, that a lot of companies would take it on, any cleanup that they funded or any project that they owned, that they would incorporate it simply because the desire for recognition and public awareness of what they were doing. After that, we have other, which there may be some text responses, but I can't see those right now. And the final one is a client request. So that is, we understand that to be that the company has hired a consulting engineering firm to do a cleanup, and they've requested that it be done consistent with the standard guide. Anything to add, Des? Okay, the second question is, would you find an ASTM searchable database of projects helpful? It looks like an overwhelming majority says yes. Of course, we're not committing to anything, but we thought this would be of value in our discussions with ASTM. Relates to the question that we just talked about earlier about where that is going to be available. So anyway, we'll take this forward and in our discussions with ASTM to see what options are to facilitate that process. The third question is over on the right here. Would you find electronic reporting helpful? So while not as overwhelming as the previous one, I guess it would be a requirement for them to be searchable. We have 78% of the responses agree with that. So again, this is a discussion we have had with ASTM throughout the process. This is not a standard protocol, I guess you could say, for ASTM to house, host, and make available reports. It's, I think, I understand it's something relatively new. So it's evolving. This information will help us work with them.
And just with regard to electronic reporting, so is the sort of interim baby step that we're working with ASTM is to make that adjunct with a writable PDF and have it and have reports you could that you could upload to their site with hopefully a long-term goal, what is to go to a database if there's a market interest for it.
Okay, so the fourth question was what aspect of the standard do you see as most useful? There are several, I guess, questions embedded in that. It looks like the highest one was information on BMPs. We have heard some discussion. In fact, I guess that's the feedback we got early on the release of the standard guide, was the fact that the BMPs in a PDF format made them difficult to use, and that's why we pursued the searchable option, which hopefully will be finalized soon. So that that confirms that that interest out there in the BMPs. The second one is a standardized process for pursuing green cleanups at any site. Happy to see that. As we said earlier, that's one of the reasons why we started working with ASTM on a voluntary guide. Is to develop one that would be applicable at any site, regardless of the regulatory program under which it was being undertaken. So that's good to hear. So then the process for selecting green to clean at BMPs and documenting and reporting the results were the next most common answers. Anything?
And it's actually enlightening to see that information on BMPs is the answer with the highest by far response, because that BMP, that searchable BMP table, is really the guts of the standard, and the rest of the standard is written around about how to use that table in order to reduce the environmental footprint of a cleanup. And what we have now is, because this table exists and there's instructions around it, really, you know, an environmental professional can take that, follow the guide, and be confident in the response that when they're actually reducing the environmental footprint by applying this table to a cleanup.
Okay, so the next question is, have you applied the guide, or do you expect to in the near future? So I think this one's split about 50-50. So 52% say yes, that either they have applied the guide or they expect to in the future. 37% are unsure, and about 11% now know that they will not apply the guide, which makes sense because a lot of people didn't know what the guide was about until we had this webinar. So anyway, I think that's encouraging. I think that's good information. There are also some additional questions that are a bit more specific about the guide and about the webinar as part of the, as you exit out of this webinar, but Gino will let you give you indications on how to get to those. But there's also an additional opportunity for participants to provide input on what they've heard today about the guide and what could be done to make it better going forward. So with that, we've walked through the five questions. We're on the phone. We can take them at this point.
We did have one other comment come in electronically, just noting that in Minnesota, the USC BMP screening has taken about 8 hours or less for projects approaching corrective action. So we just wanted to provide a little feedback about how many hours it took them to use this.
That's great. So they were piloting it at some of their sites. And that was it was on my slide, and thank you, Rebecca. And they've been piloting it, and this is probably, so their average is 8 hours. It's great to hear that.
Yep, thanks for the info. Much appreciated.
All right. Well, if there are no other comments or questions, let me just give those who might be only on the phones one shot to come off of the phone and make a comment verbally. If you have joined us on the telephone lines, we did globally mute all the callers. So if you have a comment or question for our presenters, you can hit #6 on your telephone right now and identify your organization or at least location, and feel free to ask your question or share your comments verbally with our presenters. Remember, you'll need to hit #6 on the phones. I do know most of the audience was streaming online today, so I think that's why the bulk of the questions came in there. Okay. Well, I don't hear anybody coming
up. Oh,
excellent. Go ahead.
I was wondering if the EPA was going to have any sort of, presentation on the other ASTM method that came out regarding integrating sustainable objectives.
No, we don't have plans for any presentations on. Do you guys remember the name of the guide?
Integrating sustainable objectives into cleanups.
Yes. No, we do not. This guide is referenced in that one. This guide focuses on the environmental components of a cleanup, and we purposely focused on this guide. We believe we have protocols in place and the major cleanup programs to address social and economic considerations. We did not deem it was necessary to develop a voluntary means of pursuing those goals, so we focused on the environmental footprint. We do not expect to have a webinar on the other guide.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the phone lines? Remember, it's #6 to come off of mute, and then identify your location, and just let us know what your question or comment is on the phone. Oh boy, I think you guys have done a good job. Well, I don't see anything else coming in electronically either. So, Carlos, Deb, and John, if there aren't any other closing statements, I can walk everybody through our final reminders as we close out today's webinar.
Yes, we're done. Thank you very much, everybody, for participating. Much appreciated.
And Jean, thank you so much for hosting.
Excellent. Well, with that, let me walk our participants through just a few final reminders as we close out today's ASTM Greener Cleanup Standard Guide webinar. We've already walked through some of those at the beginning, but just a couple of reminders for participants. We often get requests for training records as participants of our webinars. We don't necessarily issue training certificates for CLUIN webinars, but I did want to alert everyone there is a website that you can visit shown on the slide, and you can actually enter in your own email address, and that will automatically email you a list of every webinar that we have on file with that email address. Many participants find that a very helpful list to keep handy when they're documenting their participation. So you can certainly visit us there and shoot yourself a self-generated email with your training records here. For those of you that would like to download a copy of the presentation slides as well as the guide or take a look at some of the other materials that were pulled together, we have had them posted on the additional resources or links page. I did share that note right in the Q&A window in the lower right corner. If you are watching this as a recorded version, those links are still active, so you can still click on them from the recorded version and open up that links or resources page and download the slides as well as the guide and other websites. We will ask if you can take just a moment to fill out our short feedback form online and let us know what you thought of today's webinar. There's also some additional questions about the guide, as Carlos mentioned earlier, so we are looking forward to hear back what you thought about the webinar as well as some additional feedback on the Greener Cleanup Standard Guide through that feedback form. If you shared the line with multiple participants, I know we had some groups with 20-plus people joining us from one spot, each person can fill out their own feedback form. Once you fill the form out, there will be a link that will appear to click and let another person generate their own feedback form. If you don't have time to do that today, this form is also active from this point forward, so you can come back to it later today or tomorrow. Again, if you're watching the archived version, the feedback form is still live, so you can share feedback even based on replaying the recorded version. For those of you that do need to try to verify your participation today, just be sure when you fill out that feedback form, you check a box that appears, it's circled in red on the screenshot, and that will actually send as close as we can get to a confirmation message, which will at least verify you submitted feedback after the live event. So if you keep a copy of that email along with your registration or a printout of the materials or homepage, that's usually enough to document and get you credit if you're trying to collect CEUs or PDHs. Again, we did record today's webinar. It usually takes us about 1 to 2 weeks to process and post the final archived webinar. All registered participants will automatically receive an email with a link to play the archived version of today's webinar, so you can keep your eyes peeled for an email from me. And once you get that, you'll be welcome to forward that on to anyone else that you think will find it to be a valuable expenditure of their time. I want to thank the over 280 participants who were able to join us from all over the world. We did have international guests as well as a very large turnout here from the United States. I want to thank all three of our presenters who were able to join us and help deliver today's session. That's the end of the final reminders I have, so thank you all again one more time for joining us. This will be the formal conclusion for today's live broadcast.